Hello and welcome, everyone, to the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri podcast with Beverly Cascaden and Chip Haley. Sponsored by the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri. Let's get to it with this week's interview. Hello and welcome, everyone, to another exciting edition of Who's Who in the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri. I'm Chip Haley.
And I'm Beverly Cascaden.
How you doing today, Bev?
I'm doing very well, thank you. The sun is shining today for a few hours. You never know what you're going to get before long at this time of year. So good, and I hear the birds singing, so everything is good.
Yes. You know, this was years ago. You get a kick out of this. I used to listen to a radio station that had a doctor on there talking about, health and all that kind of stuff. And one of the things that he was always famous for saying, when someone would ask him how he's doing, he said, "I am vibrating with extreme wellness." And I kind of liked that. So when people would ask me how I'm doing, I said, "Oh, I am vibrating with extreme wellness." They thought that was all right about the extreme wellness, but they didn't know about that vibrating part. So I decided, I better give it up. So I don't want to get nobody.
Well, you got their attention.
Right. I didn't want to give anybody any strange ideas. So.
You're not boring. That's for sure.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is my distinct pleasure to bring on today our esteemed guest. And we're just so thrilled, tickled that he has graciously consented to being our guest here today on Who's Who in the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri, Harry Kastrup. So glad to have you with us, Harry. Welcome to Who's Who in the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri.
Good morning, Chip, Beverly. It's nice to hear.
So, Harry, as we started, before we actually started the recording today, we kind of went over how we do things here. And so I had mentioned we want to kind of like maybe start off talking about your vision loss. What was the result of your loss of vision? So why don't you share with us what brought on your vision loss?
Well, I have a family history of RP, retinitis pigmentosa. And what happened was, my brother, we have six kids, six siblings, and my brother started realizing that in his mid-20s, he was having vision issues. So he went to a ophthalmologist down at WashU and was diagnosed with RP. And see, my grandfather grew up with us and he was blind, but he always told us that he was in World War I. He said he got gassed in a foxhole and he never told us that he had RP.
Yeah.
So. Wow. Yeah, so my brother dug up his Army records, and it showed on the Army records that he had RP. And my father and his brother never knew it themselves. They never knew it. And so it's hereditary, and it follows usually males, and it skipped a generation because my father and my uncle, my dad and my uncle never got it. So it skipped a generation. Well, my uncle only had two girls, and they called it male dominance. So then we had three boys, three girls. Well, all three of us boys have it. And then later on, I have a younger sister, the baby in the family. She ended up getting it when she was like 55. Now she's 60.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really odd. But when the thing about this we're trying to tie in is that the other two girls were blonde-headed, fair-complected, and she is dark-haired and low, not dark-complected, but she's dark hair and low voice. And so I don't know how it came out, but she ended up having it. The other two girls never had it. So basically three of us have it. We're all three blind. And I'm the youngest, and I was 23. I went down and seen Dr. Wolf, and he did an ERG, which is not very nice, but got that done and he diagnosed it. So I was already married. I married at 21. So me and my wife decided, we're not going to let this stop us. So we got to, go on with our lives and, we're going to have kids and, hopefully whatever comes out of it. And, so we went on and I told him, I said, it'd be nice if we could go out and do things and travel a little bit now what we can afford. And, I'd like to be able to see something because later on the golden years, I'm not going to be able to see. I mean, it'd be nice to have golden years, but when you can't see into golden years, you like to at least know what it looked like the first time.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we did.
Yeah.
We did a little bit of traveling.
Yeah.
You know, got to a few islands and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And we're able to get some of that stuff done. But that's really how the RP came about. And really, it was a very slow. I was actually able to work 30 years in my career.
Yeah.
Before it really kind of took it away.
Okay.
Enough to where I didn't feel comfortable.
Yeah. Okay. So do you have any residual vision at all?
Right now, all I can see is a light bulb.
Okay. All right.
I have no, everything else is just shadows.
There's
nothing else really. Just a light bulb.
Okay. Well, let me also ask you, Harry, growing up in a family where some of your family members have the same eye condition as you, was it easier to accept or more challenging and difficult to accept, even though you knew you had family members with the same eye condition? Was it easier, or how was it for you?
I think it's easier because I seen my grandfather. I lived with him for almost 2 years as I was growing up as a young kid up here in North County. And he lived with us, and I seen exactly what he went through and what he had to do and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, he had a white cane, but it had the turn on the top. You know, they didn't have the white canes like we have now. And he used it a little bit, but he got around the house and he was able to eat, go to the bathroom all by himself and all that kind of stuff. It just that he got to his medical problem was too much for my mom to handle. And that's why they put him into a nursing home.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it was interesting to see that. And, you know, me and my younger sister, we used to play around with him. He would always have his legs crossed. We would come up and touch him in the leg and kind of tickle his leg. And he'd reach down there and try to grab your hand like a little thing. So
yeah.
It was the kind of thing you remember when you're a little kid.
Yeah.
It was that. But having my other brothers and sisters, you know, it is better. And I think I'm the most advanced part as far as keeping track. Even though my middle brother, the one that found it first, he went up to Boston, got in all those time trial things and tried to get in different, see if they had, you know, cures or working with all different kinds of things up in Boston. It didn't do anything.
Yeah.
There's no cure for it.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
And my oldest brother, he probably drilled the longest. He was able to stay up, believe it or not. He was able to, I don't know, I guess, I contributed, and I always say this, and I ever get a joke out of it, but he's never been married. He's 75 years old, and he actually, his vision lasted longer than the other two of us. And I always said it was because he didn't get married. It was a woman that caused it.
Oh, no.
No, I said he didn't have the stress of a woman. That's what I said.
I'm done.
Like that,
goodbye.
Now I'm a male chauvinist pig. I know. No, I always joke with him about that because he never got married.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, you know what? He doesn't have that family stress. Maybe it's the family stress.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Yeah.
It could be
stress related. I always say a woman,
right?
It's just a family stress because me and my other brother had kids, and you know, it's a little bit different atmosphere than being all by yourself and going out and going fishing and hunting all the time. And what kind of stress do you have? Did the fish hit your line or not?
Well, you mentioned a time in your early childhood, living with your grandpa and all that kind of stuff. And two, he was blind. Well, so was mine. My grandpa was blind. And he also had a severe hearing loss. Back there then, they didn't have like the over-the-ear hearing aids, inner ear hearing aids. You know, he had the thing where a piece would go over the ear, but the other piece fitting in his shirt pocket. So it was, it was quite a bit different. And his cane was, it was red and white. And all that, and it had a crook at the top of the cane, but it wasn't long.
Right.
It didn't come up to his breastbone.
No.
It barely came up to his belly button.
For a walking cane for like when you have a sore leg.
Right. Yeah. But he did quite well, and I miss him. But that was many, many, many years ago. So also, Harry, tell us, where did you make home when you were growing up?
Well, actually, I was born in Ferguson.
Okay.
And then we moved to Florissant. I basically was in Florissant. I was raised basically from about second grade on up in Florissant all the way up.
Yeah. Okay.
Up
sure.
Actually, the home. Yeah. The same home. You know.
Yeah.
I'm actually still there.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. You mentioned, you know, some of your siblings, brothers, sisters, and all that. Now, you and your wife have children?
We were married in 1977. And I have three children, two girls and a boy.
All right. And do they live close by?
Yeah, two girls live in St. Peter's, and my son is in, he's in South Bend, Indiana right now, but he's moving right now to Detroit.
Oh, okay. What's taking him to Detroit?
Why?
Well, the reason why is he was in South Bend because his wife went to work for Notre Dame.
Oh,
so
yeah.
He
yeah.
is an athletic.
Uh-huh.
And he's an athletic trainer. Uh-huh. So he was working at a high school there right next to Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And now her family is from Detroit, and she's an only child. And so she said that she'd like to live up closer to her mom and dad because they're getting older.
Yeah.
And so they're moving to Detroit. So she works at home now. She left Notre Dame. She works for a different company out of her house. And so she can move anywhere. And he went up and got a job at, Henry Ford Medical Center up there, and he's going to work for a NAIA college up there, and they're in the process. They sold their house, so it's going to all happen this month. They're actually coming in this weekend for Mother's Day. Two daughters both live here, and my oldest daughter, she works for Cottleville. She is a fire inspector, and my other daughter is she works for the federal government. She is a probation officer downtown in the federal building.
All right. Good.
Yeah. She's the one that carries a gun. That's the one you don't want to mess
yeah,
with.
Yeah. 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 Don't mess with her.
You don't want to mess with her.
Yeah. So, Harry, what is your wife's name?
My wife's name is Debbie.
Oh, Debbie. Okay. So, how did you and your wife meet?
We are in high school sweethearts.
Is that right?
Aww.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I can say that because we met in high school. We dated through high school, and we got married a year. I graduated in 75, and then she graduated in 76, and we got married in 77.
Okay.
So we'd already known each other almost 4 years before we got married. Yeah.
And
so I couldn't hold her off much longer.
All right. So, Harry, did you pursue any further education after high school?
I actually graduated in 75, and I went to Rankin Technical School in 76 while she was doing her senior year.
Uh-huh.
I went to Rankin Technical School, and I was an auto body technician.
Is that right? Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. See, this was before I knew my eyes, so I went down and started learning how to work on cars because my family, my father was an auto mechanic. My middle brother was an auto mechanic. And then my oldest brother was a heating and air conditioning. And my father went to Rankin, and my brother that went to heating and air conditioning, he went through Rankin. So it was kind of like a family thing. So I thought, I'll go through it.
Yeah. Okay.
I didn't have anything else really to pursue. Didn't really have any real ambitions of anything really, but I thought, well, you know, I'll try this.
Yeah.
And I made a 30-year career out of it.
Oh, excellent.
Wow.
My middle son, he went to college. What was it? Lynn College, just not too far from Jefferson City, graduated. And so he's been into that field for quite some time. Now he works for the Department of Transportation for the state of Missouri. And then my oldest grandson, he's going to be taking heating and cooling. So he's going to be going in, he's already enrolled. So he's looking forward for that opportunity. So, yeah.
Good career.
Oh, yeah, 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 you bet, yeah. I'm going to push it over to Bev because I know she's always just chomping at the bits with her questions.
Where do I begin? Well, and two, yeah, I was going to ask you about that 30-year career. And, yeah, that just seemed natural for you, Harry. Okay, what was your first car?
My first car was a 62 Rambler American convertible.
Oh, my.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my.
The little bitty square thing with a convertible. My brother, I told you, worked in auto mechanic. He worked at a place out in, I guess it would be called Brentwood. And a lot of older people were out there. And these older people couldn't drive anymore, and they had all these cars sitting in their parking garages. And he would find them, and he would get them, and then he'd sell them. You know, he sold it to me. I bought a couple cars from him that way because they're low mileage, they're cute little cars. Of course, Grandma never did wax them, so they were not looking very good. But the top was nice, and we put the top on. It was a fun little car.
Oh,
that was my
wow.
first car.
That was your first one, and the second one?
It was a 69 Camaro. That was my car.
Are you kidding me? This
no,
is
no,
exactly.
That's...
My first car was a 64 Rambler.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah, and my sister had it, then my mom had it, and then I got it. And then after that, I saved my money until I had it. You saved your money, you know, to buy a car.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I got a 69 Camaro.
Really?
It was green with a vinyl roof, a black vinyl roof.
That's what I had. Yeah.
Is
Mine
it
was
really?
Light green with a black vinyl roof.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mine was a stick shift too. Three on.
Oh
five.
Well. Okay. Mine wasn't that. Dad tried to teach me the Volkswagen to take to college with a stick shift, and I didn't do too well. He said, "All right, take the Mercury." He gave up
Beverly,
on
I
me with the
Volkswagen. Beverly, I taught every one of my children how to drive a stick shift, and you know what? They all loved doing it. They all got in and did it. And the funniest story I have with that is my middle daughter. I worked at the Bomarito District. Automotive, and she came out and worked as a secretary one time to answer the phones.
Uh-huh.
And they were clearing the showroom one day. They sold a car on the showroom, and all of a sudden it started raining, and they had a little Miata convertible out there, and they were all stick shifts. She jumped out of the chair from answering the phone, jumped in the Miata, and drove right in. And all the guys are just looking at her and goes, "You know how to do that?" He goes, "It's no big deal, man. It's just a stick shift." And I didn't laugh. They all couldn't believe a girl knew how to drive a stick shift.
Yep. My daughter, my oldest daughter, one of her first cars was a stick shift. And two, all the guys at her work, she worked, her first job was at, that hardware store, HQ, home quarters.
Yeah.
And all the guys, can I drive your car? Can I drive? She goes, "Sure, it's a stick shift." I go, "Oh, okay, never mind."
Exactly.
Wow, I've never found anybody else who's had a Rambler and then the Camaro.
Yeah, 64 Rambler Camaro. I don't know if I ever have pictures of it.
That what color was your Rambler?
It was blue with a white top and a white interior.
Yep, that was mine too. Are you sure you didn't have my car?
You sure you weren't the girl sitting in the front seat next to me? Because there was bench seats in those.
Yes. Yep, and I remember that Rambler. I would put that accelerator all to the floor and barely get it to 55, which was the speed limit then.
It wasn't the speed demon, but you know, it did what it had to do. And I really regretted ever getting rid of it. And my wife was really mad when I sold it because I didn't get that much money out of it. But they were really mad at me. But she said, "You should have saved the car." I said, "I didn't know what to do with it. And I got another car here." And so I should have saved it. I should have took it to Rankin and had it redone, but I didn't.
Regrets. You can't look back and have regrets.
No,
just keep going forward.
Exactly.
I tell you what, though, that Camaro, it was a 350 V8 engine.
Oh, boy.
So I barely touched the accelerator and whoa, it was a little bit different than the Rambler.
Yeah. I didn't have a 350, I had a 327, but it was a nice, it rode good and ran real well.
Well, I tell you what, Harry, I bought it from this young man that his dad was a vice president at GM in Detroit.
Oh.
You know, so he put this engine in there, you know, and he souped it up. So, look at the things we learned.
I'd love to have another one of those, but I can't drive it. Yeah, I'd love to have another one of those, but I can't drive it anyway. So just be somebody, I'd have to ride it.
Oh, it would kill you. It would kill you that you're out, it's sitting out there and you got to go drive it. You know, did you ever do that, you know, when you couldn't drive anymore, you think, I can still drive.
I tried to move a car in my driveway one time and I ended up being sideways. So I thought, I better not do this anymore. So when you can't see, it's too dangerous. And I said, you know what? I don't feel so bad giving up my wheels, because I was always scared when my vision started going, of going through a parking lot and some little kid run out. And if I hit the kid, I'd never live to it. That was always my biggest fear. So I decided when I couldn't drive and couldn't see enough, well, you quit night driving first, and then by the time you can't pass your driver's license, I don't feel that. I mean, it's unfortunate I can't get to where I want to go when I want to go. But you know what? You get over that, because it's too dangerous.
Yeah.
Especially the way people drive today.
Yeah. Well, I still have dreams that I'm driving, and I know I shouldn't be.
Yeah.
You too, Chip.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yep.
Oh, you always think that you want to do that or you can do it. But like you said, it's just not. Mm-hmm. I always like to tease people about it. I think it's a funny thing. My daughter's wedding, I would sit up there and, you know, when you do your thing, when you do your speech and all that, and I'd tell everybody, you know, if you drink too much tonight, please feel free. I'll be more than glad to drive you home. And everybody starts laughing. And it's only the people laughing that know me, because they know I can't drive. And the people on the other side of the family, they all look at you, what are they talking about? What's so funny?
You know what? Makes them sober up real quick.
And the other one I always get people on is when I'm in a truck stop or something and was on traveling and I'll go into the restroom and somebody will help me in the restroom and I'm leaving the restroom and the guy will help me through the restroom. There's so nice people out there. And I'm walking out of the restroom and my wife's standing there and I thank the guy for doing it. My wife thanks him. And as he's walking away, I say, okay, it's my turn to drive. And you hear him chuckle. I said, don't worry, I'll wait till you get off the lot.
Yes.
If I can get somebody to laugh
right
once a day, it's a good thing.
I think that makes people more comfortable, you know, especially if they don't know you. When you can break the ice with them with humor, it makes it better for them too.
I agree. And there's a lot of nice, people out there. That's all I can say. A lot of nice people, a lot of compassionate people. And I think you just have to show that compassion in both ways. And I think people, you know, people see that white cane, they know what that white cane means. And I think it makes them feel good, in my opinion. I do. I think it makes them feel good that they go back to their car or back in their house or wherever they're at and say, you know what, I did something good.
Yes. You know, and that was our topic that actually I got it from Chip too, for the peer support of when you help someone else, you're really helping yourself too, the rewards you get from helping someone is very beneficial. So,
It's like the old saying when you used to help old people walk across the street, you know?
Uh-huh.
You know, you get an older lady and she's carrying groceries and somebody would go over and grab her groceries and help her across the street. You know, you do something like that because it makes you feel good. You mix, you know, and they appreciate that and they thank you or whatever. And that's what's good about, you know, in the blind. As long as you're carrying that, and I tell my brother and sister, and my brothers, I says, you ain't carrying that cane, and you walk in places and you start bumping into people, you're going to get elbows in the face and all that.
Uh-huh.
But you need to have that white cane, because that white cane acknowledges that you're blind and that you need help, and they will automatically, people will sit there. I mean, I've had people all over the United States, Disney World. I had a young kid with a backpack sat there and said, oh, just put your hand in my backpack, I'll get you out of here. It is. And it's very, and like I said, we stop on the, you know, on the road to go to the restroom, and people always sit there and you walk in and they'll tell you where, you know, the bathroom is, where the sink is. And you'd be washing your hands. They'll tell you where the soap is.
Sure.
Next thing you know, you hear the towels going out and they're handing you towels. and these people, they don't know you for nothing. And then put your hand on my shoulder. I'll get you out of here.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, and instead of, you know, some blind people, and unfortunately, someone will sit there and say, oh, I can do it all myself. You know, it's not that you can't do it yourself, but if somebody's offering you that, I mean, that's what blindness is all about. You don't want sympathy, you want assistance. That's all. That's my theory.
Yeah.
That's always been my theory. You just need assistance, and if you have, you know, whether you can figure your way out or you can bang in everything on the way out, it's not that you can't. It's just that if somebody wants to offer you some assistance, take it.
That
don't be
makes
so,
life
you know,
a little easier, doesn't it?
Yes, and it does. Makes life a little easier.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a situation. I was going back to Illinois, where I'm from, with some girlfriends that came down to get me, and we stopped at a gas station, and I took my turn in the one bathroom, the one, you know, only one person could go in at a time. And my girlfriend, they're not used to what I need, you know, and so I was getting ready to come out, and I couldn't find the door to get out of the bathroom. I'm in there trying to find, I go, oh, I finally found some hinges on the wall of a door, but there was no doorknob. And I thought, well, that's weird. I couldn't find, finally, I found the door to get out, and my girlfriends were out there talking. I could hear them. I knew they were out there. I didn't know there was a guy standing in line for the men's restroom. Mm. And I said, I was locked in there. I didn't think I'd ever find the door to get out. I found the storage closet in there. And this guy just started laughing, you know. And I said, well, it's not easy. You go in there. And
well, you know, she could call me and say, hey, put a blindfold on. You go and see how good you do.
Yeah, yes. Wouldn't you love to tell people that, you know?
I do.
Do you? Yeah.
I used to have a boss like that, you know. I used to sit there and say, you know, hey, he goes, you need to do this faster. I said, well, put a blindfold on if you can do it. Oh, that has nothing to do with it. I said, well, then put one on and tell me if you can't do it any faster. I said,
yeah.
You can see what you're doing. I said, it's just a matter of, you know, you work within your parameters without getting hurt. That's all.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be in a hurry. But, you know, a blind man told me when you walk into a bathroom, the best thing to do is to take your cane and follow the wall. As soon as you walk in, follow the wall. The wall will lead you around to everything you need to see, whether it's a multi-bathroom or a single. And you can, your cane will find all the different facilities or whatever that, that you're looking for. And that's what I've been doing. It really does, especially in a multi-bathroom. That's what really, because when you got multiple things, and you know you got more people coming in too. And so if you're the only one in there, then you got to find everything yourself.
Quickly. Yeah.
Well, I don't do that quickly thing. I just do it when I'm done, you know, whenever I'll find my way in, and sooner or later I'll circle all the way around and find my way back out. Like you said, you're always running across that those hinges, and they ended up going to a door that don't open. So you know, sooner or later there's gotta be a door in there with a knob.
Yes. And then when a gal that worked there, she was standing there and she said, oh, that's our storage closet. And I said, well, I found the storage closet, but I sure couldn't find the door to come out of here. And, as long as they understood, you know.
It happens. It happens.
Yeah, it happens. Mm. Chip, you have another round of questions for
I
Harry?
Sure do. You know, I'm just sitting here listening to you, Bev and Harry. It's amazing how much the three of us actually do have in common. Harry, when you and Bev were talking about your Ramblers, I too owned a Rambler. I can't remember the year, but it had to be somewhere around the late 60s. I drove it to Stockton, there in Stockton, Missouri. They have a lake there, and I drove it to the lake, and it broke down on me. I couldn't get it home. I finally got a ride with one of the guys that we had all gone up there and gone fishing, but I got a ride with one of the guys. My dad was so upset at me that I left that Rambler there at the lake. Well, I don't know what he expected me to do. I couldn't get it home. It wouldn't start anything else. But we went up there. We got it and towed it back home and all that. Then you're talking about a 69 Camaro. My son, my oldest boy, he's got a Camaro. He loves that thing. It's a convertible Camaro. He loves that car. He'll come by and get me. We'll go somewhere. Now, I'm not really used to sitting in a car that sits that low, but his does sit pretty low. And, it's just our time together and all that. So yeah, just sitting here listening to the both of you, it's amazing how much we all three of us have in common. So
What I really liked, saw the difference, is when you're turning a curve and that car would just hug the road
right.
as you turn, you know, go into it.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just had
no problem.
Fun cars.
Yep. And then you're talking too about going into the men's restroom, and not, like what you said, Carrie, taking your cane and just kind of trailing the wall is an excellent point. You do that, you're more than likely not going to get lost. But here's the thing: if I'm in a large area restroom and nobody's in there, and I'm washing my hands and you know and all that, and I hate it when they've got a blow dryer or the paper towels behind me across the restroom, not knowing that they're there, you know, again, then you have to take your cane and trail the, you know, the wall and all that until you finally find them. So then I come out of there and some of the people that I'm with, what in the world took you so long in there? I said, hey, man, when you've got to feel your way around everything, you know, it takes you. Well, you've got to find the soap dispenser. You got to do all these different kind of things. It takes you a while sometimes when you go into a strange restroom. So I know the feeling. So
just one of those things you just mentioned was the paper towels.
Yeah.
You get the paper towels and you wipe your hands, and then you can't find the trash can. You know,
that's right. That's right. That is so true. Exactly.
I don't throw them on the floor or throw them in the sink.
Right.
I walk out with them.
Yeah. Well,
the advantage of a woman is she can tuck that paper towel in her purse. I'll just take it with me.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, Harry, I don't like these, the dispenser where it's on the cabinet there where it's got a big hole right next to the sink. You don't know that it's there, and you're looking for a trash can, and there is no trash can, but it's there on the right next to the sink somewhere.
Sometimes. I know what
you're talking about. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, it can be a challenge, but the thing about it, just what you're saying, is you're walking around with your hands.
Right.
I try, like the man told me, and I learned it. I work at the lighthouse, and a lot of blind people there have been blind for a long time. He's the one that use your cane, he says, because if you walk around with your hands, you don't know where your hands are going to touch.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. And
it's a restroom, and you don't know how often it gets cleaned.
Yeah.
You're gonna get, even though you're gonna go in and eventually wash your hands, but then you gotta get back out of there too. He says, try to use your cane more than your hands, because you don't wanna be walking your hands around. Next thing you know, your hands go into a urinal or something.
Or even into a stall.
Try to use that. He said, try to use that cane and use your feet. And try to see if you can get around better that way. And I said, another thing that I, you know, by working with a lot of blind people that I have and learning with them and spending a lot of time with them, you learn so much more about things like that.
Right.
And the things that you don't know. I mean, I'm a person that passes on information, anything that comes out there, you know, and any easy way of doing something. And I hear about it, I'll tell other people, other blind people or other sighted people or my family and stuff like that, because they don't get out to be around blind people as much. And you know, when you can learn so much more from spending time, even like going to conventions, you know, same thing. I mean, there's no book out there. I'm sure there's plenty of videos and books, but I mean, there's no, you know, not many people want to sit there and read them or listen to them. So it's just a matter of what you get out of it.
Yeah. Well, Harry, you too also have a hearing loss, correct?
I do.
Okay. And I do as well. I wear over the ear hearing aids. I used to wear the inner canal, but I started wearing the over the ear, and I've wore hearing aids probably since about 1993. So with a dual sensory disability as you have and I have, what do you find the most challenging? Is it your vision loss or is it your hearing loss?
My wife will say it's my hearing, but I mean, I actually, I think the hearing is harder than the vision, to be honest with you, because you have to have so many different people repeat to you, even though you got your hearing aids on, because, you know, some people, they talk like, oh, you say what, you know, and they don't talk clearly. And I tell people, I said, it's not the volume.
That's true. That's right.
The pun. It's the way you pronunciate things.
Yeah.
If you don't, I got a guy from Mississippi, you know, and they're like, what? You know, and I sit with him and I talk to him all the time. And I almost every time I got to ask him to repeat himself.
Sure.
Because he doesn't talk loud enough. And then there's a lot of women that have very soft voices. My granddaughter's like that. And sometimes my wife too. And I have to ask them, you know, you're going to have to repeat what you just said because I didn't quite understand what you just said.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, the hearing is probably to me a little more harder. And of course, I've had the vision a little longer, but your hearing, I guess, has been there. I mean, to be honest with you, I had something really weird happen to me in high school. My hearing was bad, and I didn't pay much attention to it. But, you know, and they give you those hearing tests all the time in school.
Right, right.
Uh-huh. And I couldn't hear nothing. So they sent me to a guy, a hearing specialist guy, and then I went to vocational rehabilitation. I don't know what that was back in the 70s. And the guy goes, you know, your hearing is bad enough. He says, we can pay for you to go to college. And I didn't think about this at all.
Right,
I sat there
right,
and said,
yeah.
I don't want to go to college. I want to go to tech school. Oh, well, we can't do that. I said, okay, no big deal. You know, think about that today. I could have got a free college education. I didn't even think about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it just wasn't something that I was interested in. But my hearing has always been down a little bit. But it was just a matter of hearing people and
right.
the way some people talk and all that kind of stuff.
But yeah.
Then
yeah.
once I got hearing aids, and then you get good hearing aids, it really makes a difference.
Sure does.
Get used
sure
to
does.
Them and all that kind of
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, sure does.
The hearing aids now, the technology now is amazing.
Yeah. It is.
Amazing.
You're right. It really
and
is.
Just,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it
yeah.
keeps getting better all the time.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
as long
yeah.
as I keep getting them every brand new ones every 3 years, and I mean it really comes in handy.
Right.
I mean, because the technology is changing all the time. Go ahead. I said the hearing itself is probably to me a little
yeah.
more harder to get used to.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I think hearing loss is more misunderstood than the vision loss. People, when they see you with a cane or whatever, you know, they understand that. But even though you're wearing hearing aids, and for me. It's the most misunderstood because somebody can say something and you maybe not quite hear them correctly and you answer, you know, the question and it's not what they ask at all. And they look at you kind of strange or funny. And I always tell my wife this. I don't know if you experienced this at all, but I always tell my wife, look, when you're speaking to me, face me. You know, like when we're in the grocery store, I'm behind the basket. Mm-hmm. She's in front of it, pulling it. And I'm behind it, kind of pushing it. And she will be facing away from me and she'll ask me something. Do I need this? And I don't. And I say, look, you're going to have to turn around and face me. Otherwise, your voice is being, you know, extended out away
going
from
the wrong
you.
Direction.
Going the wrong direction. Yeah, exactly. So I always tell people that all the time. Or she may be, you know, looking at the very bottom shelf and not even facing me or whatever. So I always try to stress that point. When you're speaking to me, especially when we're out in public like that, then, you know, face me because otherwise I'm probably not going to be able to hear you.
Especially with a lot of background noise.
Yeah, yeah. Right, mm-hmm. right. Yeah. And so I always think that the hearing loss is more misunderstood because, you know, sometimes maybe you don't hear them or somebody could be talking to you or asking you something and you're not answering them. And so they take it wrong, you know, like, well, he stuck up. He didn't even, you know, we walked into church Sunday morning and, one of the guys there, you know, said hello to me, but I didn't hear him. And so Linda says, well, Scotty just said hello. Oh, and I said, oh, I'm sorry, Scotty. How you been? You know, but otherwise, you know, somebody might mistake the fact that I didn't hear them as maybe something else, which wouldn't be right. So that's the reason why I think sometimes a hearing loss is more misunderstood than the vision loss. So
I have to agree with you on that. I have to agree with you.
Yeah. So, Harry, let's talk a little bit. I know you've been working at the Lighthouse for how long you've been working there now?
Almost 14 years now.
Ooh, that's a long time.
Yeah, I got out of my other job, and I stayed home for about 4 years, kind of playing around the house. Then when my vision really went down, I said, oh, it's time to do something. And the funny thing about the Lighthouse is I used to ride the bus back and forth to my job. And the bus would go by, and it would go into this place called Lighthouse of the Blind. And I'd see the sign, and I'd see two guys walk out with white sticks and get on the bus. And I'm going, you know, someday I might have to work there.
Yeah.
I finally lost my sight.
I made
arrangements and then called, and they said, well, you got to go to a temp agency. And I went to the temp agency and put my name in there, and they called me out, and I got interviewed by two production managers, and both of them said, well, we're not looking for anybody right now. I said, okay. And so I went home, and 2 days later, one guy called me and says, can you start on Monday? I'm going, but you didn't meet anybody.
So
I've been there, and I went through, it's been a real up and down experience because of the Lighthouse is a good place for blind people, because there are not many jobs for blind people.
Sure.
And I say this all the time.
Right.
There's really not many out there. And, you know, Lighthouse has been going through a lot of changes itself and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, they've had a management problem for a while now. And they finally, I was actually ready to retire this month after all the stuff I went through last year, because it was a lot of aggravation. I said, I don't need this. You know, I'm at the age now, I can retire anytime I want. I just do this for 3 days a week to do something to do. But the people are really good. And now they've got into different management people in there, and they are really good. And I really like them. And I'm going, you know what, I'm going to stick around a little while. And told the wife, and she says, I don't care. Get out of my hair, you know. So, I don't need you around here. So, I mean, for 3 days a week, for 3 days a week, they don't care. It's just a good experience.
Uh-huh.
And when you're working, you know, the people that you work with there are great.
Yes.
I mean, it's like it's like your second family.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
And then, whether they're sighted or visually impaired or blind. And then now that you got a good management staff in there, it really makes it enjoyable to go there. I mean, it's not easy to get up at 4:30 in the morning because you got to deal with all the call rides and all that kind of stuff. But you know what? In the long run, it's still an enjoyable time, and a job not really hard. I mean, it's not like you're really going to get crazy or anything like that. You just, you know, whatever you're packing cans in a box, or you're, you know, running, you know, whatever you can do, you know, putting bottles on a line or something like that. But it's just, when you got good people that you're working for and good people you're working with, it makes your day a little bit more enjoyable.
Oh yeah, that's really.
Otherwise, I was ready to leave. Actually, I thought it was kind of funny. In January, I made a doctor appointment on a Monday, and I never make appointments on Monday. I make them on Thursday and Friday because that's the days I'm off. And I said, "Why did I do that?" Because, well, in January I was planning on quitting in May. That's why. Now my appointment in June is on a Monday, so it was just the way it happened like that. But I told the people that. I told every one of them in there. I said, if you wouldn't have got rid of those people, I said, I'd have been gone. Because I don't appreciate, you don't respect me. And you got people in there that don't know how to deal with blind people. You've got an HR lady that does not know how to deal with blind people. You know, she walks up to a blind lady and says, you need to get into Paycom. And the lady says, I don't have a computer. I don't know anything about a computer. So, well, if you can't do that, you're not working here. And it's like, how about you? You know, you can assist her by getting into Paycom. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the kind of person. Thank God they got rid of the lady. But it's a great place. There's a lot of really good, you know, people in there, and I learned so much from them. Blind people working with them, just how to do this, how to do that, you know. And you know, it's kind of interesting because you get with sighted people, and like yesterday, you know, I'm working with a sighted guy. Two of them, and they all ask, well, how did you go blind? You know, can you see anything at all? And they were interested in it. It doesn't offend me to tell them things.
I don't think of it.
I'm not ashamed of it.
Right.
You know, I tell them how it happened, what it is, what can you see, and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I always tell the ladies that, you know, I can't see your beautiful face. And that always gets them real happy.
Yeah.
And I tell them, like, I can't see that you only weigh 98 pounds, and that makes them happy too.
Sure. Yeah.
Isn't that two things that I tell the ladies, you know? And, you know, and you know, it's just a matter of talking to the people. And what's really interesting, and I'll tell everybody this, we've hired some Spanish girls there from Central America. There's about five or six of them in there, and they speak Spanish all day long. They know a little bit of American, but they are the nicest people and the most considerate. That they'll go around and they see you coming, they'll open a door for you, and they'll come up. The other day, I put my hand on the wall, I was looking for the time clock. All of a sudden, somebody grabbed my wrist and moved my wrist over a foot and put it right on top of the time clock. And I said, thank you. And I'm looking for this time clock. And I know it was her, because she talks Spanish in return. And they're just really nice people, and it's, they appreciate, and they like I said, it's interesting to work with that, because I never had that before.
Sure.
Where people, and they're just walking around all day long speaking Spanish back and forth to each other. I don't think they know my first name, but that's okay. I call them all Senorita, so it doesn't matter. I can't go wrong.
Especially
yesterday being Cinco de Mayo, so, you know, they were all excited.
Yeah, yeah.
But I got to say, it's a good place for blind people to get to work there, and they're always looking for blind people. It's just a matter of whether they, you can stand for a long period of time, because it is a standing job, and some of them you can sit, but it's just one of those things. And I've tried to recommend, you know, people to go there, and sometimes they get in, they get interviews, sometimes they get in there, sometimes they don't. You know, it's just one of those things. And
yeah,
but I, like I said, the worst thing about JIF is that you're just really hard for people that leave there and try to find a job somewhere else and then realize there isn't much out there.
Right.
Still want to work and all that.
I'm going to push it over to Bev here in just a second, but I know what you were talking about when you were saying, you know, the working there is just like home away from home. And that's exactly how I felt when I was working at the Independent Living Center down here in Joplin. I worked there for 23 years. And I always just said, you know, this is my home away from home. And I always love the camaraderie in working with the other staff, because you do develop those friendships. There is a lot of joking, kidding around, laughing, getting to know one another and all that. And, you know, they accepted me. You know, and they were so good in providing me the equipment that I needed to do my job. I was a public policy advocate and thoroughly enjoyed it, working with the state legislature on public policy, doing all those different kind of things. So it was really great in my time there working those 23 years. So I really fully understand what you're talking about. I mean, and it's great. I love working. I'm doing some stuff now, training with JAWS and doing different things like that. But, and I kind of like that too, because I can do some of that work at home, you know, so doing it remotely. And, and then when necessary, I can do the itinerant time working with a client or something like that. But it's all really great. And like you said too, Harry, there's not a whole great deal of jobs out there. And we're still at that 70-75% unemployment rate for those that are blind, visually impaired, and which the ADA hasn't really helped us all that much. So, you know, hey, look, some of us, we'll take whatever we can get. We can enjoy it. And I'm sure that you've enjoyed the camaraderie with the folks that you worked with there at the Lighthouse.
And the thing about it is what you just said with the ADA. The problem is that most of these companies don't want to take the responsibility of hiring a blind person.
Yeah,
they don't want to, they don't think that their insurance and the liability, they don't want them person to get hurt or hurt somebody else. And so that's why it's really, you know, really touchy on when you, what kind of field they can go in. And then, you know, unless you're really qualified in computers and all that kind of stuff, where some of them might give you a chance at customer service or something like that. But then, you know, they went, oh, well, we need somebody that has some vision. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not. You know, they're totally blind. So it's kind of tough. It's a tough world out there, especially with blind people that, I mean, I know one that has a master's degree and he couldn't get a job. He worked at the Lighthouse.
Right. Yeah.
You know, palletizing boxes with a master's degree.
Right.
I'm going,
holy
cow.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
So
it's kind of, it's a tough world out there. And like I said, they're only going to, Amazon was bringing in some blind people for a while, and I just don't know if they're doing it anymore or not.
Yeah, they still are. Yeah, they've got blind people coming into those distribution centers and doing some stuff, but they're kind of tough to work
boxes.
With. Yeah,
they sit in there. I know a couple of them that work at the Lighthouse. They went over there and they sit around all day long and 4 or 5 hour shift, and they make boxes, run them through the machine and tape the one end of it and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And, they were doing some other ones. They're actually setting them up with an iPhone where they can put it into a vest, and they're walking around with a vest with Be My Eye on it, where they can see where they're going.
Sure.
I've heard a few of them getting that, but I don't know how much consistent that is. And they're pretty, you know, Lighthouse is pretty lenient because they know you're coming in on call rides and all that kind of stuff. They don't have a problem with, you know, if you don't get there on time and all that, where some of them other places, they're not like that.
Right.
You get late a couple times because your call ride's late, they fire you.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they don't have the leniency like we have. We have leniency where, you know, you'll get docked, but they're not going to count points against you. So that's the thing about that.
All right. So, Bev, I'm sorry we took up so much of the time today. We don't have a whole lot of time remaining, but I'm going to give it to you, and you just go ahead and see if you can lead us all the way home here.
Well, the one, you know, I keep finding different questions. This could go on and on and on because your work at the lighthouse, I wanted to ask, what is the turnover rate?
You know, I'll be honest with you. When I rehired, I was terminated in 2013. When I got rehired in 2017, mm-hmm. a person had to die for me to get in there. That's how tight it was back then.
Wow.
A person passed away and I got in there. And that was, now they're looking for, I keep hearing the word 15 blind people. I keep hearing it all the time. I mean, they bring in one or two, and next thing you know, one or two quit or fired or something like that. You know, it's just, you know, it never used to be a real big turnover, but in the last couple of years, we had a really tough, like I said, management people in there, uh-huh. and the place has really gone down as far as getting, well, let's put it this way. The man that was hired here in January, February, we were 450 items back ordered.
Wow.
And the other day they told us we're down to 22. That's how good he is.
Because
he brings in a good team. And that's what that is. And the people are there. Here's what it is. The people are there. The blind people are there. We know what we're doing. Okay. Uh-huh. The management had to get themselves on schedule. And then it's an older plant. And so stuff breaks down. And our maintenance people, they're new because a lot of them retired. So these guys are still learning how to keep the maintenance going on these older machines. And so we run behind a little bit. So we're down to 20s. I don't know if we'll ever get down to zero or not, because as fast as you get down to 10, you'll be back up to 15 because you can't get caught up, because we picked up a lot of business. Mm-hmm. We actually bought a company named Falcon out of New Jersey, and they make the air cans that clean your computers, the spray air. Mm-hmm. And it's a big business nationwide. I mean, we go out, everybody, Walmart, Costco, you name it, we make it for them. And it's a big, big business. And we actually opened up another building next door and put lines in there just for that stuff. And they can't even keep up.
Wow.
So we've really expanded this whole thing. And so it's taken not just government work that we normally did before. Now we actually have lighthouse stuff. And so it's become, like I said, it's a pretty big operation now. And so with multiple buildings, and we've always had two buildings. There's one over in Overland, and then there's ours. But it's just, we have a lot more people in there right now than we had before. And a lot of temps. We bring in a lot of temps. But I enjoy it. And, you know, I'm at that point now where I could actually walk out anytime I wanted to, but they like me and I like them. And so I kind of leave it at that.
Yeah. Yep. Do it while you can. You know, is there a percentage that you have to have of legally
75%,
blind? 75%.
75-25. And that goes, I believe, in the management side. That's employees. So we have a lot of people in there. We have, actually, our CEO is supposed to be visually impaired. I don't know how much he is. He still drives around in a nice car. So, you know, he's got that legally blind thing, you know, going, okay.
Yeah,
but most of them in there, and did or have some type. But most of the management staff, and then you have your QC quality control. They're all sighted, and then you have your maintenance staff. They're all sighted.
Okay.
And your shipping, because you don't need somebody in a forklift that's got, you know, visually impaired.
Sorry, I just took out that wall.
Well, we've had a couple accidents on our forklifts, and you know, since I've been there. And one time, a guy backed up over a blind guy's toe, so that kind of messed up his ankle. And then another time, we get some of these young forklift drivers, and they've been there a while. They don't realize it. And one guy was coming down one time, the mate was getting ready to make a turn, and there was a blind lady cutting across an intersection. And somebody yelled, everybody froze. Well, when they all froze, the whole load shifted, and 5-gallon drums fell on top of this lady.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they came off the skid and fell on top of her. And so she was a little banged up a little bit. But needless to say, everybody survived. I think the forklift driver, he was sent out for a drug test and never came back.
Oh.
Yeah, so basically you knew what was going on. But they've made a lot of changes since then, put some of those mirrors up, and they, you know, kind of keep people, change the direction of where the blind people can walk now. Instead of going up and down a lot of the aisles, now they moved us and going in. Now we're going in and out of the office instead. We're actually walking through the main office and all that as a pathway to keep us off of the lines more where the forklifts go up and down. So,
well, I think it's great that St. Louis has this, you know, available for people, you know, because like you said, it is hard for someone who is blind or low vision even to get a job and breaking that barrier with the general public who do not understand what a blind person can or cannot do, or just even legally blind. And I've heard young people even say, you know, who are visually impaired, well, I guess I'll be a social worker. They don't have their heart into it, but that's what they've been told, you know. And there's a lot more out there. They got to build that confidence that you can do. But we have to break that barrier, like I said, with the general public.
You know, what's crazy about that is before I went there, my other job was at the Bomarito Automotive Group. When I worked out at Bomarito, I was in the auto body shop, right? Well, I couldn't work on cars anymore. So they gave me, and I started doing paperwork and payrolls and all kinds of things like that. And I had my own little office and rehab services heard of. And so they thought it was the greatest thing in the world to have somebody at a car dealership going through rehab services. So, I mean, they're bringing out all kinds of computers and everything to help me and any kind of magnifiers to keep me working as long as possible. And I stayed up, probably did that about 7 years before I got to the point where I felt them. But, man, they just thought it was great that they had, you know, they even sent me a lady out one time to show me how to get around with a white cane. I said, whoa, I said, you're too far ahead of me on this one. I don't need that. I can still see. I didn't need a white cane at all. I told her, I said, you know, I appreciate the offer. I said, I don't need that yet. I said, when I need it, I'll be more than glad. But,
yeah.
I mean, and Bomarito was really good about it. The man, John Bomarito, sat there and told me one time, me and my wife, he said, you got a job as long as you want to work. And I told him, I said, as long as I can do the job, I will stay here.
Yeah.
But if I can't do the job anymore, then I'm going to go ahead and retire because I don't want the liability of me getting hurt or, you know, anybody else getting hurt because of me.
Yeah.
And that's why I ended up leaving, because I can see, you know, walking around the parking lot and somebody backs out of a stone and they run over my toes. I'm going, yeah, I think it's time to go. These people don't see me and I don't see them. So I think it's time to go. But, you know, it was a great job and great people to work for. And it was neat. I like Chip said, I was there 23 years. And so really good family to work with and good people. But, you know, just after a while, it's like anything else, you know, you got to move on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good. I know we said we're going to talk about BLVCM, Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri. And we really haven't, but I do want to give you a lot of credit for selling all those raffle tickets for us, our fundraiser, you know,
I went to the Line House, and I told everybody at the Line House.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I got managers all the way up to the director of operations. I all bought tickets. I went in there. You know, you go in there and you tell them you're selling tickets and you got a chance of winning $5,000, you know what I mean? And it's $20 for three tickets, and most of them will all do it. You know, some of it's kind of funny because they all sit there and they say, I don't carry any cash. I said, well, then ask your wife for $20 and you can come back and buy three tickets. And then you go up to the lady manager and she pulls out her purse and says, I got $20. I said, well, you need to lend him $20 because he's got to go get a kitchen pass from his wife for $20.
Oh my gosh.
I think it's funny.
That's great.
No, I did sell a lot of tickets, and I still got some more here. In fact, I got two of my three kids are going to see her for Mother's Day. And I already told them, I said, bring your $20 because you haven't bought my tickets yet. See, I've bought everything they sell. Their kids are in dancing schools and baseballs and all that. And I'm always buying stuff for them. And I said, you know, it's payback time.
Yeah.
And these $20. So they're all going to be here this weekend. I think I got 10 tickets left, and I think I got 9 of them committed. So I think I'm pretty good. We get together. I told you my Angry Lunch Bunch group gets together on 15th, and all of them got tickets. And so we're going to put them all together and get them out to them. We'll probably have another $500 worth of tickets to join.
Good.
Great.
Most of them are all farmer. They're all mostly all farmer lighthouse employees. I'm about the only one still working there. And so most of them are in the group. A couple of them aren't, but that's their choice.
Well, I love you. Have got such a great support system with other friends too that come into Cobblestone. We don't refer to everybody individually. We just say Harry's group.
That's called the Angry Lunch Bunch. That's how we named Brian Hollows named us that because we were all terminated from the lighthouse in 2013. So we all went out to lunch. And then Ryan would take photos of it and email it to the boss. And here we were out at lunch place. Hey, having a good lunch without you. We'd have the Hooter girls. We'd go to Hooters. We'd have the Hooter girls standing behind us.
Oh, my gosh.
We did it to them about 3 times. It was funny.
You enjoy life, don't you, Harry?
Well, we try. We try. Like I said, I try with everything. Except right now, it's kind of, it's a tough time right now. And I told you that before. It's a tough time right now with my wife. And so I don't know if I need to bring that up, but it is what it is. We just have to deal with it.
The more prayers, the better.
Yes. So, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Chip, I don't know if you know, Chip, but like I said, my wife's been diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. And so it's kind of a tough time. That's why I'm home today. Normally I'd be working, but she just did chemo yesterday. And so I stay home the day after chemo to make sure she's okay.
And our thoughts and prayers will be with both you and your wife. So I'm just so terribly sorry to hear that.
It's tough, but we're dealing with it. And we all have bracelets and t-shirts that say one day at a time. So that's what we're doing.
Yep. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. My daughter bought t-shirts for everybody, and my grandson went out and ordered little rubber band bracelets for everybody. It says one day at a time, so we're all wearing them.
Oh, wow.
So that's all we're doing. Yeah, it's he's 14 years old. He's an umpire. Then he took his umpire money and went out and bought a bunch of them. He saw them online.
Yeah.
But see, the problem with the 14-year-olds and all that, they know she's sick, but they don't know the severity of
it. Right, right, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they just know she's sick, and they don't know the extensiveness of it. But it is what it is, and we have to deal with it.
But
otherwise, it's been a great time talking to you both, and I hope I didn't embarrass you or anything like that.
Nothing.
It was great.
Being in the group, I think the people I've recommended to the group and all that kind of stuff. I think it's a good group of people. It's a very good group of people and a lot of knowledge there and a lot of experience there. And I enjoy listening to the phone message, and hopefully I can get a little bit more participating in the future. But I thought at least now if I could do just something by selling tickets, it's a good thing.
Sure it is.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Harry. Yeah, and I really enjoyed I always enjoy talking to you. But I'm sure our audience will really enjoy this interview, too. Always get such positive responses.
Yes,
If I didn't put them to sleep, I'm okay.
No, I don't think you did that. Not at all. Yeah.
I mean, I could have sat there and told jokes the whole time because I had a stand-up routine. That, I don't want to make them hang up the phone. It's good. If I can get people to laugh.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you know someone that you would like for Bev and I to interview here on Who's Who in the Blind and Low Vision Community in Missouri, you can have them give me a call, Chip Haley, at 417-540-9703.
Or Beverly Cascaden at 636-561-6947.
You never know, you might hear yourself next time, right here on Who's Who in the Blind and Low Vision Community of Missouri. Bye-bye for now.